Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we are all about packing as much into your expat life as you can, filling it up and getting the most out of the experience. Our expat podcast has now had over 1 million downloads from over 160 countries. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie who's based in Qatar, and I'm here with Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Together, we have 12 locations between us. That's a lot of new kitchens, lost can openers, and couches that don't fit through the door. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. Thank you very much. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 101.
What? Okay, Nikki, we're going to follow our usual format and break the podcast up into five different topics, which are, of course, geographically challenged, where we talk about the discombobulation of having perhaps your heart, head, and soul spread across a few locations.
Yep. And as well, we're also going to cover expat relationships, whether it be ours or someone else's. And when we say relationships, it can be friendships, business partnerships, marriages, or kids.
And we'll take a look at expat tech and bring you all of our new discoveries in the world of tech and communication that make our expat lives a little easier.
We'll also talk about expat money, whether you're making, losing, spending, or giving in your part of the world, and the best way to go about it.
And Nikki, you'll do your usual thing, location, 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 where we have a quick chat with an expat who's somewhere in the world and get the skinny, or should I say the fat, on how to live an expat life.
Okay, let's get started. Geographically challenged. Kirsty, I know you've been feeling geographically challenged this week.
I have been feeling very challenged. I've had a lot of thoughts. So my mother-in-law is staying with me at the moment, and I've talked about my mother-in-law before in this podcast because she was an expat as well, and I've written about her in the past on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases blog of her little gems of wisdom. But of course my husband is away in India this week because I don't know if anybody else, man, woman or whatever, who's in a relationship enjoys that experience where their mother-in-law comes to stay and their partner just leaves the freaking country. So, yeah, he was in.
That's the second week in a row, right?
Yes. He went to, very cleverly, went to, where was he last week? The Philippines. And, yes, this week he's had a meeting to go to in India. So, yes, it's just been me, my mother-in-law and the boys at the table. But I'm lucky because she is really an incredibly generous person and a great conversationalist, and she always has sort of stories to tell about her expat life as well. But something that sort of came up this week, because I've been thinking a lot, because my, you know, I have two children who are now at school in Australia, and my son, and two children who are here. My son is going to be going to Australia next year, and he's just really got into this MMA, which is mixed martial arts. Have you seen that, Nikki? It's a phenomenon. Yes. I didn't know existed until he started it.
Yeah, I think it's an American phenomenon, because the countries we lived in before America, we did sort of like, you did judo or taekwondo.
Yeah.
But then you go to America and you do MMA.
Yes.
A little bit of everything.
Yes. Same here. I had a friend who was a big jiu-jitsu person and would go to jiu-jitsu, and I'm with you. Like, people went off to karate or whatever. But yes, my son, and I have to say, mixed martial arts, MMA, that's never been my world. I'm not one of those wrestling people or, you know, a throw them on the ground kind of girl. But if you have a 14-year-old son, this thing is fantastic, and he is absolutely addicted to it. So he goes three times a week, and they, you know, do a whole lot of exercising and fitness stuff, and then they're doing, you know, what looks, I guess, like wrestling, but I'm sure it is more jiu-jitsu or something like that, where they wear their little outfits and whatever. I'm really not telling this story well. What I'm trying to say is he's found something that he really likes and he's really into it. And, of course, my immediate thing is, as a mother, oh, shivers, is he going to be able to do this in Australia, and is this going to be difficult for him to do while he's at boarding school? You know, are they going to be cool with him leaving and going to that? And, you know, am I, is our expat life once again curbing a child from progressing into something that they do? And it just got me thinking about the amount of times that happens in your life as an expat, where, you know, I had daughters who were really into dance in Canada, loved it 3 times a week, really enjoyed it, thought it was great. We got to America, we went to this, you know, the dance place, they both went, not doing it. And, you know, things like that happen all the time when you're moving, where you can't find the same thing. And my mother-in-law, you know, here she is, my husband's in his 40s, and my mother-in-law is still grieving that they lived in one place where he learned the piano, and they moved on to their next place and he didn't like the piano teacher and he just stopped. And she still swears that he could have been a brilliant, you know, pianist, that he had the fingers for it, Nikki. He was just going to be amazing. So I don't know, have you had that in your expat life where you've got things?
Yes, we have. So yes, so my son loved judo, loved it in South Africa, went to judo competitions, you know, regional competitions, really, really enjoyed it. We moved to America, it was MMA. He had to start again because you start at the bottom. And so he was with all the little kids and he wasn't a little kid anymore.
Yeah.
And it just did not work for him. And we couldn't find judo to save our souls. And then with my daughter with lacrosse, so she loves team sports. And in the US, she began playing lacrosse, played sort of 6 seasons, I think. So they have a fall and a spring season, so twice a year. And then we moved here, no lacrosse. I said, oh, you should play hockey. No, I don't want to play hockey. So now she plays volleyball and basketball, and she said, oh, and if I went to boarding school in another country, which we try and encourage that discussion of as often as we can, would they have you in volleyball and basketball? And I think, oh my God, they might not. You can't start when you're 15 or 16. It's very hard to start a team sport from scratch because, you know, those kids have been developing those skills for years and years and years.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's this additional grieving that we don't acknowledge that comes from a move. So you've not only lost your friends and your home and all those tangible things that, you know, you can touch and feel, but it's you've lost a part of yourself, of what may have been, whether it's a love of something as well. Like that affects that kind of part of your personality and identity, of what you were kind of hoping for as a kid or even an adult. And it got me thinking about, I saw this, there's this great writing exercise where, I don't know, Nikki, because you've been doing a writing course, haven't you? Did I read that somewhere on your...
No, I've been going to writing meetups.
Oh, totally writing meetups, right. So it wasn't, I did my first writing course here in Qatar, and I remember, and so it was all new and fresh to me that you do all these writing courses where you're given prompts, and so people prompt you to, you know, write about, imagine one of your body parts and write on behalf of that body part, you know, so all of a sudden you're speaking on behalf of your stomach or your arm or your nose or your whatever, or, you know, something about your personality. But there is this writing exercise called If I Didn't Do Insert Whatever There, Then Whatever Never Could Have Happened. So if I didn't do A, then B never could have happened. And I was thinking, I think that is a really positive way of flipping it around. Okay, so instead of, because, you know, it's like the same thing when you say about a sport and you change school. You know, my daughter was a great softballer and she loves softball here, and she was a little bit of a star here. She was the pitcher, but it was a very small competition. She gets to Australia and the same thing, like you've discussed, she gets there, there's a bunch of kids that have all been playing it since they were, you know, 5, and they're, you know, there's people in her team that play for the state, and she lost all confidence and she didn't want to play anymore because, you know, she realized there were all these amazing players. And it would be easy to go, this is miserable, I hate it and terrible, but there's also so many other things she gained from going to school in Australia, and new sports that she picked up and new talents that she suddenly realized she had and new opportunities. So I think maybe that way of, you know, keeping it fat and trying to think of what you're gaining is that it doesn't always have to be a loss, that we need to always remember, if I didn't do, oh, Yes, and there's the mosque on cue. Every time I record this podcast, it's time to go to the mosque. So maybe thinking, if I didn't do A, then B never could have really happened, and thinking about it in that way. So I guess that was my little bit of geographically challenged for this week.
I think we can all relate to that. So I just want to say that you can, of course, leave us a message or ask us a question by heading to our website, twofatexpats.com, and press on the microphone button. It's as easy as leaving a voicemail.
Okay. So, Nikki, expat relationships.
Okay, so this is something I've been thinking about. It's really it's sort of stuck with me since the beginning of the school year. As the welcomer for other Australian families at our school, I've had a situation where I reached out over the holidays and welcomed some new families to the school. Unfortunately, they were in the position where they were waiting to hear whether they're accepted from the school, which happens when you have children that require learning support or special needs education. Often it's very difficult to move internationally because schools can be very challenging in terms of, you know, getting involved and being accepted into those schools. So these families were waiting over the holidays to find out if they're accepted. They moved countries, assuming that they were going to go to this school. They found their residential places, assuming they were going to go to this school. Then when school was just about to start, they were advised that, unfortunately, they wouldn't be able to be placed at the school.
Ouch.
And I just think it is so difficult. It's difficult to move countries. It's difficult to upend your life and move from one country to the next. And these were both families who were moving from Australia. So they had never had another expat experience. So this was their introduction to the whole thing.
Ooh.
And, you know, and they have to move children who are, you know, all children. It's difficult to move children at any age, and it's difficult to move any kind of children. But sometimes if your child has issues with transition or moving, you know, it's that extra little bit of stress and pressure that you're putting on yourself, and then arriving in a country and having this. And it was just, I was so gutted for them. And the other thing I want to say, because this is something I'm very passionate about, as you know, they had provided information to the school that they would not necessarily have had if they were coming from another country. So the fact that they were coming from Australia, where these issues are addressed at a very early age in the education system, meant that they were able to provide information to the new school. Now, I know that there are other kids coming from other countries and other schools that might have children in exactly the same position but don't present this information to the school because they don't have it. They don't know it. It's not, you know. So it's just one of those other things where, depending on what country you're coming from, what country you're moving to, you know, there are so many variables in a move. And these are families, we are, I think, a month into the school year. Luckily, well, both of them are under six, so therefore in Germany you don't have to be at school legally until you're six, so they can sit out until the end of this school year or have an alternative arrangement made. But it's so difficult, and in Germany homeschooling is illegal, so you can't just sort of say, okay, well, it's okay till we fix this, we'll just go to homeschool you.
But you can have you can have a beer with your parents at age 12.
But you can't. 14. Let's not get carried away. But yeah, so it's just okay.
I want to break this down. But so this comes under expat relationships because you're saying about your relationship with your partner through going through this, or your relationship with the school, or your
it affects
everybody and everything. Right.
Yes.
You and I, as seasoned expats, we both know that international schools are completely crap at dealing with special needs. Is that a fair assessment, do you think, Nikki?
Well, I think it's a fair assessment for a majority of international schools.
Yes.
I know through research that there are some international schools, particularly those in the not-for-profit area, that have excellent programs of learning support and special education. Mm-hmm. In fact, the school that we belong to has a learning support department.
So why can't these kids go there?
That's a very interesting question. And it was they didn't have the resources in this coming year. So there are kids that are already there that have support, but they just was, it was ascertained that in the coming year, in this particular class, in this particular age range, they didn't have the resources to support these children.
So are you telling me that these people would have been better off to lie? Could they have got away with lying about it? Did they actually have to sit down in front of anyone and take any sort of test where they had to pass a test to get in, or was it solely previous report cards?
I can tell you that it would have been better off for them to not to lie, but to provide the information asked based on previous report cards, etc. And they most likely would have been accepted into the school without that. I think that it's very difficult. And look, I've talked about my children before. I have a child that uses learning support programs, and he has used them in every country that we've lived in. And we've had made different arrangements with different schools depending on what he needs. So some schools just don't have this. One school we went to in South Africa, they said, okay, well, we can do this, but we need you to employ somebody to work with him for X hours a day. That's fine. You know, there are so many different ways you can work around it, but unfortunately it depends on, you know, the relationship that you, another relationship is the one that you establish with the school.
Yes.
And how the school sort of deals with that relationship as well. So it's just, as it's a little soapbox I get on, and I'm very passionate about it, but I think that, you know, that this is their first expat move. So their own relationships that they're dealing with their families, you know, they've told their kids they're going to school, school starts, kids aren't going, you know, that's one part of it. With your partner, that's very difficult. Your relationship with yourself and the what it does to your confidence and to how you're feeling about the move, it just puts it all particularly in a very difficult light to start out. And I just thought it was worth highlighting that we realize that people are going through that as well.
Yeah, I totally realize people are going through it, and I think it's wrong. But I know there will be people shouting at us from afar at the moment, seasoned expats, that will say, I cannot believe that they moved without thinking this was going to be a problem.
Well, I get that, but because they're seasoned expats, and these are people who are moving for the first time to another country.
Yeah.
And
I think that's the point, isn't it, Nikki, is that that's the advice we need to give people, because there might be people listening now who are about to embark on their expat adventure. And we see this sort of thing happen time and time again, where people move somewhere and they say things that seem so simple to everybody else, like, oh, I didn't realize rent was going to be so expensive, or, oh, I didn't realize school fees were completely out of this world, or whatever. I think this is one of those things. Oh, I didn't realize that they weren't going to have learning support, because it seems crazy, because you look at some of these international schools that look like Disneyland schools, right? They have rock climbing walls and three swimming pools and,
And they don't have any special needs education.
Yeah, and they don't have any special needs education, and they look at you like you're crazy that you think you might, consider your child being at that within the school community. It's just not normal. And I think if people want to look back, like this is in a different scenario, because this is learning support, but also when it comes to special needs, like if you happen to have a child with Down syndrome, you know, you're in all sorts of strife in certain countries trying to find the right support you need. We have done an episode on that. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but we have spoken about that before. And so I will make sure that we have it on the website for people to find if that's your scenario. But yeah, that's a really, really good point, Nikki. And that can just, I cannot imagine the stress that these poor people are under. I also, part of me is saying, like, if you met them as a welcome coordinator, what on earth were the school thinking to engage the welcome coordinator before accepting the people into the school?
That's another thing. I think our school tries to do very good work on welcoming, so you get the names as soon as they apply to the school. Oh. I had no idea that their children weren't, oh. like I didn't know what the application process was. The names were just passed to me in relation to these are new Australian families that will be at our school. So I didn't know that there was a chance that they weren't going to be there.
Oh.
And so I, you know, I engaged with them the same way I engaged with everybody else.
Mm.
And, you know, it was only through my interaction with them that I found out that perhaps this wouldn't happen. And so they were reluctant because I was trying to engage them with sort of play dates with other people, and they were sort of reluctant to pursue that because they wanted to find out 100% what was going to happen, which I totally understand.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to go and have a play date with Jimmy and then, you know, because Jimmy's going to be in your class and then you never see Jimmy again because.
Yeah. Now, just on that, I would love it if people could, because I think this is a great expat sort of topic too of what were you surprised at when you arrived at your new destination that you weren't expecting? So, yeah, just before we move along, I just want to remind people how to rate the podcast or leave a review. If you would like to leave us a review, we would really appreciate it. It's how people get to find us. Some of us go to iTunes and find podcasts that way. Others go to an app called Apple Podcasts and do it that way. So if you could rate or review, leave a comment so we can see you, but also it just means it's really easy for people to find us that way. On that note, I want to say a big, big thank you to Jossie Saltz from Switzerland who left a review last week. She said episode 99 was very well timed for her, having just returned from a home visit and feeling exhausted by all of the one-sided efforts with friends. Yes, because we had touched on that on the episode before. Okay, Nikki. Technically expat, what tech discoveries or problems do you have this week?
I have questions, so many questions for you. It's also a follow-up to episode 99 where you talked about Uncle Andrew coming to Qatar from Hong Kong and bringing his technical expertise with him over the holiday period and resetting you up. So you were just like watching TV in Australia through your Apple TV. And then this week you made a comment in the Facebook group that something had happened.
Yes.
And you couldn't watch The Bachelor or The Survivor or something.
Yes. And the control freak in me. So this is the control freak in me, and I'm sure everybody else did it too. When I was in Australia and my husband told me that Uncle Andrew had set up the new Apple TV, my immediate thought was, what happens when something goes wrong? Do you know, like, if we haven't set this up, what happens the first time something goes wrong and we don't know how to fix it? Anyway, sure enough, that thing happened when not only was Uncle Andrew not here, but my husband was in the Philippines as well.
Well, you talked about how you spoke to somebody who helped you out with your question, but I do have a question when you get to the end, but I'm interested in how you resolved your issue because I would like to have an Apple TV. We have an old one, but we don't use it anymore, but to get a new one. And to be able to watch things through our VPN in other countries, but I move between my countries.
Yes.
So I wonder whether it's possible to one day watch an Australian show and the next day perhaps watch something from my US library.
Yes, you can. You can do it effortlessly and you can watch one show straight after each other. You don't even have to wait till the next day. And I know this is very hard for those of us who have used VPNs to get our heads around. I had this conversation with my mate Nigel while we were watching the footy last week. He was saying, but I don't understand. So I guess in the olden days of, you know, 6 months ago, we would have VPNs and you would set your VPN to be in a certain country so that you could watch those things in that country, right? And that's how you would do it. And this is where I got so confused with the Apple TV because I came home and the new Apple TV will have the Australian Football League app there, which requires you to be out of the country. You can't get that app within Australia. It's only for overseas people. But right next to it, it has the Channel 10 or template app, which requires you to be in Australia to be able to use. It's not for people out of the country. So I, the technology of that just did my head in. I was thinking, but hold on, we've got this VPN. You know, where does it say we are? How is it that I can watch the football in 1 second and then I can watch Survivor and The Bachelor straight after? Do you know, how is the television doing this? You know, this seems too hard to understand. And this is the whole thing about the DNS. So when you set up your Apple TV, what you need is a DNS, which is, and I can't remember now, it's a digital navigation system, or domain navigation system, sorry, I think, for those that are screaming at me. So it's setting up your domain. The domain then talks to the VPN. So say if you are with a VPN such as Getflix, when you go to Getflix and you subscribe, it will give you all the different countries you want to be in for all the different services. So Getflix will say to you, okay, which country do you want to be in for Netflix? Which country do you want to be in for BBC, ITV? Which country do you want to be in for 10play? It will ask you. So you can say, okay, for the AFL, I want to be in Qatar. But when I watch 10play, I want to be in Australia. But when I watch BBC, I want to be in London. And you can set all those things up. And so you set that up, and then it will send you over to your closest provider. If you're in Qatar, that's in Turkey. And so you will set up your DNS for that server, and then away you go, and it knows all of those things for you. It is amazing.
Hang on, that's not within the Apple TV.
Yeah, well, that's within the settings of the app. That's the Apple TV talking to your VPN provider, your if you use Getflix.
Your Getflix. Okay, yes. Right. Because sometimes I want to be in US Netflix, but sometimes I want to be in Australian Netflix, but sometimes I want to be in German Netflix.
And Getflix, I believe, will be able to tell you that. I only have one Netflix account, so I can't.
No, so do I. I only have one Netflix account. You can watch it whatever country you want from it.
So there you go. There's your answer.
Okay.
All right. So that is Expat Tech for this week.
So have you joined our Two Fat Expats Facebook group? Because we have over 10,000 members in there now, and you can discuss or learn anything from our amazing members. How to transport your sex toys? Tick. How kickstarting your career in Jakarta? Or does anyone know how to find a birthday cake in Kigali, Rwanda? Can I just say that is nearly one of my favorite posts of all time?
Yeah, me too.
That was achieved.
And Nikki, speaking of our group, I had a man contact me yesterday who wanted to advertise in our group. And of course, that is a big fat no, because we know that that's what people like about the group. We have a very big, strong rule of don't blow your own trumpet, and don't even bring your own trumpet. Don't mention your trumpet. Your trumpet doesn't belong in our group. But this man was from a moving company, and he wanted to know if he could advertise. And I said no, but I did tell him that if he wanted to sponsor our podcast, he could. And so I thought, you know, we never really mentioned that here, that if you want to sponsor the podcast, we are always open to sponsorship. We, like we said, we've had people from over 162 countries log in, which I find amazing, because I think there's only, 195 countries in the world or something like
there
that.
There is. I Googled that after you sent me that.
That is amazing.
I wanted to find out who hasn't listened.
Yeah. Yeah, up your bum, oogadoogoo. Yes. So please, if you'd like to sponsor us, we'd love to hear from you, and you can reach us by contacting us through twofatexpats.com. Okay, what are we up to? Expat money. Nikki, tell me.
Expat money.
I want to know about Pocket Smith. Did you get there? Last week you were sick and all the rest of it. How have you gone this week?
Well, this week I did go further down the Pocket Smith rabbit hole, and the first thing I tried to do, now reminding everybody that this was an application that was suggested by you, Kirsty, because you had seen somebody mention it in an expat group and say it was the bomb, the bomb diggity.
Yes.
So I thought, oh, that sounds good, and I'm willing to go into it. So the first thing I tried to do was download it on my phone as an app, and it said, you know, this app accompanies a web-based program, so you can't download it here. You have to first have it set up online.
Okay.
On the physical internet, not just phone app.
Yeah.
So then I went there and then I looked at the options. So then I went to the site and it showed me different options. Now, for free, it says for the casual budgeter, you can do manual imports from your bank accounts. You can have up to 12 different budgets, but you can only have two bank accounts that feed in. So one of the reasons that we talked about it being excellent for expats is that if you have different bank accounts in different countries and does the currency stuff, is that you could use all that. So what I'm thinking is the person that recommended it so highly perhaps might have a premium subscription where you pay $7.50 a month if you pay it annually, otherwise $9.95 month to month. And it does automatic bank feeds, automatic and manual transaction importing, categorization. You have unlimited budgets and you have 10, up to 10 bank accounts that can feed into it. So I haven't pressed any buttons to buy that yet. But I thought I'd do the research and then I thought I'd ask if anybody has any other suggestions because I'm open to resetting the budget thing. And if they use any other programs or apps. And I know that for the best stuff, sometimes you have to pay. And I'm not saying that's not going to happen in the future. I'm just seeing if anyone has an app or anything that they use that doesn't cost.
So it's $9.95 a month, but then it's $7.50. How does
it? If you pay for a year in advance.
I got it. Okay, I've got it. And you're allowed to have 10 bank accounts. And so that means it will talk to all those bank accounts.
Yes, so it feeds the bank feeds, yeah.
And does it give you those bank feeds in real time, like it will all happen?
I didn't go
right
down that, but I imagine you have to refresh it and it will refresh your bank feed. But that's just in my head because if someone's yelling at me, that's not the case. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
I don't know whether it's hard. And how do you'd think that they'd give you a month free to decide, you know, whether it was worth it to you.
Oh, yes. I might have to look at that. I'll put the link into it on the page and tell me whether they give you a month free, but I'm not sure. I didn't spring out at
me. because you're not going to jump on and do that, are you, without sort of knowing if it's going to be worth your while.
Yes, I guess you'd start with the free and then decide whether that's going to work, but it's really got the manual imports, so there's no sort of automatic bank feeds, which has always been the benefit of you know, apps like that, just to feed automatically in.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my update. So my money's still sitting in my bank account and I know generally what's going on with it. So you can leave us a message or ask a question by heading to our website, twofatexpats.com, and press on the microphone button. It's just like leaving a voicemail. Do you know who did that recently? Jenna did, Kirsty. And Jenna is part of our under 30 demographic and called to tell us that we have listeners in that bracket.
Hi, ladies. Just wanted to say a big hello and a big thank you for the podcast that you do. My name is Jenna and I currently live in Frankfurt in Germany. I expatriated from England about 4 years ago when I originally came to be an au pair for a gap year, and then a year later decided that I wanted to live here full time. And I really wanted to say thank you. Earlier in the year, I discovered your podcasts and they have been absolutely amazing in helping guide me and making decisions, being aware of different things that I never would have thought about. And I've just listened to one of your earlier podcasts from last year about where you joked about having listeners under the age of 30, where you didn't think you had any. Well, you do. I'm 23 and I am taking in all of your advice and all of the stories and everything, and it's really, really helping me settle. So I really wanted to say thank you for helping me make the best of my expat life.
We love you, Jenna. You make us feel 20 years younger. Okay, is it time for location, 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 Nikki?
It is time for location, location, location. Now, this week we're up to, well, last week we didn't do it because we had the walk down memory lane of the 100 episodes. The week prior to that we did Hong Kong. So after H comes I in the alphabet. So I did two interviews this week. The first one I did was with Malika, who's from Kyrgyzstan and lives in Istanbul. So I was really keen to speak to someone in Istanbul because it's on my go-to destination list. And But unfortunately, the sound quality made it really difficult. And when I realized we were recording, the sound quality was bad. When I listened back, it actually was much worse, and I couldn't make it work for an interview. But while I was casting about for interviews, I did have a second person who said they could do it with me. So I spoke to Kim Johnson. So Kim and her family live in the Ukraine. So she lives there with her husband and her 6 children, and also 3 adults that they have been granted guardianship of by the Ukrainian government. So Kim and her husband, Jed, went to the Ukraine to look at adopting one of the more than 100,000 institutionalized children. And when they got there, they realized that that wasn't going to work out for them. So they changed their whole lives. They moved to the Ukraine and they set up a not-for-profit organization to get developmentally disabled kids out of institutions and living with families. So you can imagine, I spoke to Kim for about 40 minutes and I could have probably spoken to her for another hour. I had so many questions and she was such a lovely person to speak to. But I did edit it down to the fat 5 and a bit. So here it is, and I'm going to have to let her do the pronunciation.
So you're just going to have to pronounce the name of your village again for me. I'm going to use my cold as an excuse that I can't really hear properly. Oh. Do you say it's Ishe?
Ivanivka.
Okay, no, not even close. Not even close. Ivanivka.
Ivanivka, yes.
Okay. Oh, so on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love with said place?
With 10 being love it, like I love it, I would never leave. five.
Yeah. And have you ever been above a 5 or below?
When it was a total construction zone, I was at like a 1. Like, what the crap did we just do? But on like snowy, cozy days, or when it's some long summer evenings when my kids are just running wild with other neighbor kids through our village and there's cows and everybody's in each other's business, it's like an 8, because it's I can give my kids like this freedom that they really don't, like kids in the U.S. don't really get that anymore. And here they just have a lot more freedom, and yeah, I love that.
And what's your best local find?
Well, we only have one little store and a post office. So.
It doesn't have to be something you've bought. Oh, like it can be, you know, anything.
We have an old grandma and grandpa that live down the road from us, and they are super nosy, but they're also super helpful. And they tell us what to do with our potatoes. And like all the village info, if something's going on, they tell us. Like, they're a good find because they're like our local find out everything people, I guess. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
What drives you crazy?
Well, there's a we lose electricity a lot. That's annoying. Mm-hmm. And past our village, like down our road, there's another village with a rock quarry. And so there's big trucks of rock going down our road like all day long. And that really irritates me because they're loud and dusty.
Mm, I feel you.
Yeah.
What's, I know you're going to live there forever, but what's one place you'd love to live?
I would love to live anywhere that speaks English. Actually, we visited Scotland last year, and I totally loved it. I love rain, and I love English. No, I would love to live in the UK for some time. I think it's awesome there.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life or your way of life, just going and living in another country?
What it is today doesn't necessarily mean that's what it's going to be forever. Yeah, when we have hard days, we think about that.
And what's the biggest lesson that you've learned?
I think I've learned that when you're, I don't know if this is necessarily expat, but it's just my circumstances, that when you're serving people who are weaker, you learn about your own brokenness and your weakness. And it's either an opportunity to grow or not. And so we are fortunate to be able to choose to help us be better people.
Wow, that's very profound. And I'm going to ask you one new question that I've just thought of before I started speaking to you. Do you have a book or a podcast or a TV show or something that you, if you ever have time to do any of those things, that you'd recommend?
I love when I'm really missing like the US and I really want to laugh. Probably a lot of people already listen to this, but I love the Popcast with Knox and Jamie.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's everything about pop culture. Like, it's just hilarious. And it, like, I just know exactly what they're talking about. And I don't have to, like, try to understand. And it just makes me laugh. It's totally pointless, but I love it. I listen whenever.
The Popcast.
Yeah, the Popcast with Knox and Jamie.
Uh-huh.
You got, it's super
fun. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm writing it down right now.
Oh, she's lovely, isn't she, Kim? She is very, very amazing.
Yeah, I just love that. And I thought, you know, just throw that new question on the end because I thought it sort of segued very nicely into our last section of the podcast.
Yes. Okay, so we're going to move straight in. Oh, can I just first say, though, that I follow Kim on Instagram, and I think we've spoken before, and I can't remember what the topic was. Was it expat adoption, Nikki, or, you know,
why have we
spoken about it before? Maybe Kim can jog my memory because I became really interested in her then, and that's when I started following her on Instagram and her life, because she is highly admirable in what she does and the work that she does. And I'm sure she wouldn't refer to it as work at all, but just their family and the extra, when she was saying, when you serve others, that is definitely the case with her. And yeah, they have a really fascinating family and a brand new baby, and who can't be sucked in by a brand new baby,
brand new baby photos
as well. But yeah, she is an absolute marvel and an incredibly special expat, and that's why our expat group, and I say it all the time, is so phenomenal, because I think people can get an idea in their head about expat life or what everybody's expat life looks like, and we are all very, very different in the choices that we've made.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Okay.
I thought also thought when Kim said what it's like today is not necessarily what it's going to be like tomorrow, that's a mantra. Yes. We should put that on the wall.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's like, you know, I was saying about my mother-in-law says these amazing things to me. She is the person that said to me on the eve of my wedding, you know, never blame each other, blame the situation. And that to me is the expat marriage mantra. You know, quite often it's not the fault of your partner or you, it's just the situation that you're in. But yes, my mother-in-law said to me the other day, you know, that she had met some people, she'd been holidaying before she came to us, and she met some people who'd been in Saudi, and that she really thought, you know, you need to, as an expat, remember that you can love the country that you're in and hate the country that you're in all within the same day. You can wake up being incredibly optimistic and absolutely love where you are and, oh, my gosh, I love this country, look at da-da-da-da-da, and by the end of the day be an absolute mental basket case and be crying, wanting to go home because of some situation. And I think, yeah, we have to remember that as well. All right, moving right along. Books, Nikki. Our book group is reading Everything I Never Told You. It is book group tonight, and I probably have about 4 hours of reading to do before I get there. I'm still not finished. But this book is incredible. It kind of begins with an ordinary day starting with an American family, and their teenage daughter is not in her bed. And then you kind of discover that their daughter is dead, and it's all about the backstory and finding out. Now, read this book, Nikki, and without completely spoiling it, I think it has, you were saying, a controversial ending.
Well, not as much controversial. So when you said Everything I Never Told You, I thought, oh, that really sounds familiar. I'm going to go and have a look. And I did have a look. I Googled it and I realized that I had read it and I really enjoyed it. And then I was reading the reviews and thinking about sort of the endings. And yeah, it's really hard, but I did enjoy it. I just think it was really well written and the different characters and, you know, how they present themselves and present their view of the person who's missing or the
thing's gone. Yes, yeah. And it is. It's one of those books that immediately, like when you start reading, you're like, I can't kind of work out what's going to happen here. Or yeah, it is. It's really, really interesting.
Well, I'll be interested to hear about what everyone thought about it at
book club. The discussion was. So I'm sorry to be so annoying to everybody and sort of mention the same book again, but it is tonight and I promise next week I'll be able to tell you what the discussion was. Okay, movies. What have you been watching?
Well, last Sunday night I went to what they call in Germany an OV or original version because all movies are dubbed, as we've discussed before.
Okay,
an original version movie of the movie Book Club, which I know has been out elsewhere in the world for some time, but I think it was brand new to Hamburg in its original version last week. And you know, it's the movie Book Club is about a group of ladies who are an indeterminate age. We're sort of led to believe they're in their late 60s, I guess. They have adult children and they've been having a book club for years and years and years. And then someone brings in 50 Shades of Grey to the book club. Mm-hmm. And all the favourites that, you know, sort of know and love. So Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Candace Bergen and Mary Steenburgen, who everyone immediately recognises when they come on the screen, obviously. I really love seeing these ladies play this role. You know, it's a rom-com, of course, for all of those contemplating romance as we get older. I went with a group of ladies who were in their probably from their early 30s to their mid-40s. I probably was the oldest one there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was interesting comments after the movie. So someone said, oh, it was a good movie, but the kissing scenes were really uncomfortable to watch. I felt awkward.
And, why, and because thought, they were older?
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, is it because they were older? I mean, I didn't think the scenes were awkward to watch, but I thought it's not what we expect a kissing scene in a movie to be, you know, the whole smooth and the whole, you know.
Yeah, because your lips, you don't have those big, fat, plumpy lips. But I'm thinking people like Jane Fonda would have big, fat, plumpy lips.
It's sort of about the close-up and the way that it's shot. And I don't know. I found it very interesting to talk to these ladies afterwards about that they felt awkward about the kissing scenes, not that there was really any sex scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, what I also found interesting is that, so the men you also recognize, but they weren't sort of as immediately recognized. Like John Johnson. I mean, would you have said that he could be Jane Fonda's love interest? I wouldn't have thought they were sort of in the same age group. But so in real life, he's 68 and she's 80, but they look sort of perfect on screen together.
Oh, she is freaky though. So she was promoting that movie when I was in Australia over the summer. So say somewhere between June and August, I saw Jane Fonda on the telly promoting the movie. And, yeah, she was freakishly sexy and she was flirting with I say freakishly sexy because, yeah, you don't put 80 years old and sexy in the same sentence usually. No. But she was really flirting with a comedian called Tommy Little, who's on the show, and he is, you know, an attractive single man who kind of promotes his singledom as such. And he was blushing with Jane Fonda. He really was, and she looked incredible because I guess she has kept exercising through life as well. So she's quite, you know, she doesn't kind of hobble onto the set and hobble off in any way. But yeah, that is really interesting, isn't it? That people would be, I don't know, would you go as far to say they were repulsed by the kissing scenes or they just didn't want to see that's what made them feel awkward?
No, like I just think think they also felt, and I'm just putting thoughts in their minds here, so sorry if any of them listening, but I think they also felt that it's not, yeah, it's just not what you usually see. So you usually see a movie and you see, you know, pretty young things kissing and whatever. And I guess just seeing older skin close up is more, it's not usual. And it's just one of those things that if you showed all the time, it'd be usual. But, you know, close up in high definition, do you want to see? I mean, I was fine with it, but I know what they meant when they said that.
It's ageist.
It's totally ageist.
It is exactly the same as being homophobic, because, I mean, that's what people said in the 70s and 80s, wasn't it, when people said, oh, I don't mind about gay people being gay. I just don't put it in front of me. You know, I just don't want to see it. It's that same thing. If you don't, you can't be it if you can't see it. And if it was normalized, we'd all be completely cool with it. I didn't go and see the movie because I just thought it looked like a really crap movie. Was it a decent movie?
No,
or not?
I mean, no, it was just a silly rom-com. And I mean, they were all playing roles. You think Diane Keaton, well, she wore a suit, you know, with the suit, with the done-up shirt, with the top button done up. And that's what she wears in every movie that I've ever seen her in. But I still just, like, it's something I watch at home on a Sunday night on the couch. But I went with a group of girlfriends because I wanted to go out. It's rare to get the opportunity to see an English movie in Hamburg, so we did it. But I just I also think another thing was one of the other girls said, oh, it makes you just feel a bit awful about what's to come. And I said, oh, I think it made me feel a bit more hopeful about what's to come. Yes. Not that I'm ever going to look like Jane Fonda or Diane Keaton, but I just thought, you know, I thought it painted a pretty, you know, it's a romantic comedy, so, you know, everyone has a happy ending. But it just, I don't know, I thought it was worth discussing because I found just the conversation around it. Like the movie itself, obviously, doesn't shine, but it was really enjoyable. And I kept thinking, that's Don Johnson. No, it's not. Yes, it is. And then one of Diane Keaton's.
He looks a little bit Kenny Rogers, doesn't he, with all that plastic surgery.
And then one of the Diane Keaton's children was Alicia Silverstone. I was like, is that Alicia Silverstone? Oh. Is it not Alicia Silverstone? And I spent the whole movie sort of wondering if it was or it wasn't. So it was one of those movies where everybody you recognized. And anyway.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So on movies that are a little bit old and have been out for a long time, but you've taken a while to get around to them, have you seen Three Billboards Outside Ebbing?
I haven't seen that, no.
Yeah, so I would completely recommend seeing it. It is the polar opposite of what you've explained, the book club. It's this really, really rich, rich story with Frances McDormand as the main character. It's based on her daughter is killed and no one's ever arrested for the crime. And she lives just outside of Ebbing and she pays to advertise on three separate billboards that are outside of Ebbing about her daughter going missing. And it's really, it's quite polarizing what's on the billboards and what's said. But it's funny, our neighbors went and saw the movie in sort of when it first came out, and they're a bit older than us, and they were talking about how it was full of swearing and whatever. So I got this very different idea of what it was. And you know, it's that's so much about movie previews, isn't it, about people's perceptions and when you go to choose a movie. But it is a really it has incredible, the characters all have incredible depth, and you will feel like you have really gone to see a very powerful story. So I thought Three Billboards Outside Ebbing was fantastic. I can see why Frances McDormand won all the awards that she did for it. I think that just about everybody in it puts out a stellar sort of performance, and it's a great, really strong movie. So the opposite of fluff and a rom-com. but, yeah, I thought it was great, and I only just sort of got around. And it is one of those ones that you can watch on a plane or watch at home. You know, you're not going to lose that cinematic experience. Yeah, I think the story definitely holds it. Now on to telly. Have you seen Hannah Gadsby's Nanette?
Well, how could I not have seen it? It was everywhere.
Oh my gosh, I know. She really is everywhere right now, isn't she?
Yeah, so it sort of was a build up over summer, and then people were sharing it over and over and over and over, and then she just popped up at the Emmy Awards last week as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And what did you think? Like, and did you watch it on your own or with kids, or how did you
see it? I watched it on my own, and I knew what to expect because I didn't know what to expect, but I had an idea about what to expect because I'd seen a lot of Twitter commentary on it, and I'd heard people talk about it on podcasts as being very powerful. And so when I started watching it, I was thinking, oh, yeah, okay. You know, it sort of has this build up. Where she sort of starts, like it's just the way she does it. It's just, it's really unusual. It's comedy, but it's a really unusual style. And the way that she gets to the actual, you know, when she gets to the main point she's trying to make is that you realize that that's always been going there, but somehow you might have seen that's where it's going. And I found it very powerful, as people say, but for the first sort of 15 minutes, maybe I was thinking, oh yeah, okay.
I see it.
But then at the end, get it. Like you really get what's happening. So what about you?
And were you watching? Yeah, same thing, because we chose it under the wrong circumstances as well. And I didn't really know anything about it. I had seen ads, like still ads of, you know, you need to see Hannah Gadsby's Nanette. But so I had watched Hannah Gadsby in Please Like Me and on the ABC, thought it was fantastic, sort of knew her character. I'd seen her on different comedy shows in Australia, you know, where it was more sort of walk-on appearances, interviews and things. And, you know, I thought she was funny, but probably didn't really give her a lot of thought. And then started watching, we did an entire family viewing because we were looking for something for the entire family to watch. Mm. And did that where you're doing the whole, oh, I'm 10 minutes in and this is slow, do you know, because you're waiting for the giggles and that sort of comedy. And anyway, we did the whole, oh, let's try something else. Cause you know what it's like when you've got the entire family and, you know, if not everybody's digging it, it's not going to work. You know, so you move on to something where everyone's like, oh yeah, I can do that. God. And on that note, how hard is it to find one thing for everybody to watch at the moment? Anyway, but then, so did that with the whole lot. And then I've read about it and thought, oh, God, I've completely missed this, you know, because people were raving about it and saying how she had almost recreated the way that comedy is delivered. And, you know, the same thing that you said, Nikki, in that, you know, there's that build up and that build up, and then you suddenly realize that the thing that you laughed at really wasn't funny. And you know, it's so clever. I just thought it was so clever. So I went back. The next day I watched it with my son, my 12-year-old son, and we were both absolutely intoxicated by it because I said to him, look, I think this is better than what we've given it credit for. We need to watch it. Watched it with him. We were both like, oh, wow. Anyway, we then sort of said to everyone else, no, this is good. Everyone else went off and watched it individually. Every member of our family thought it was absolutely incredible. So that goes from my husband in his 40s to, you know, my girls in their teens and my son. I think it was just, it was so well done and really made you think about what makes you laugh and why it makes you laugh.
Yeah. And then seeing the follow-up part on the Emmys was just so, you think, how can she condense all that into sort of 2 minutes? And she just does it. It's just like, it's magic. Yes.
Now, I should say, I know I haven't got this on, I hadn't sort of had a thought about this. I just wanted to say, too, while I was talking about things that all of you can watch, Hamish and Andy's True Stories, it's on Channel 10 in Australia, so on the 10 Play app. We've had a different scenario this week where we've had to find things that grandma can also watch. So you know, grandma is a big fan of the ABC and Four Corners, and sometimes that's not what the kids want to watch. And so then my sons are absolutely loving Atypical at the moment. We've gone back for the second season of Atypical, but yep. I know that for grandma that would probably be a bit too strong. So we've found Hamish and Andy's True Stories as perfect. Grandma's having a giggle. She's quite into it. The kids are having a giggle. We're all happy. And we're obviously still making our way through Survivor, which I have to say was Australian Survivor at the moment. If you are not Australian, I would love for you to give me feedback and tell me, because I think this is the best Survivor I've seen. Truly. Have you been watching it?
I haven't watched it. I have read a few things about it.
Oh. Oh, I think it's brilliant. Okay, anyway, what are you watching on the telly?
Well, I haven't watched it yet, but Magnum P.I. is back. Kirstie, do you remember Magnum P.I.? It was a series from 1980 to 1988 was the original.
Yep.
And I guess that...
Tom Selleck,
absolutely, now Blue Bloods. And it's a remake. So I just want to know what your view is on remakes, and would you watch it?
Yeah, I don't usually do remakes. Yeah. And I can't think of a lot of remakes. Miami Vice, I remember they did a
remake. Oh, God,
remake. Did they? Yep, 21 Jump Street, they did a remake. Now, Murphy Brown's coming back, isn't it? I think that would be interesting.
Also this week. Remake. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Murphy Brown is not a remake, it's an extension. So it's the same show coming back years later. Whereas this Magnum P.I. is like a remake.
All right.
I really think the best remake of all time that I have to say is The Office, the American Office, because the English Office was just
brilliant.
Awkward and brilliant. And in the American Office, I watched the first season and they just did all the same scripts and it was really not great. But then they kind of went down their own path, and I just think that the American Office was as good as the English Office for mine.
Oh,
sorry, British people yelling into the void.
I think if you ever want to have a good giggle, go onto YouTube and look at the outtakes of the American Office. It's hysterical.
Oh,
they had lots of fun. Yeah, do that. Now, Nikki, podcasts, what have you been listening to?
Well, Kirstie, I know you're a fan of Oprah, big, big fan. Are you also a fan of Ellen?
Not as much. I'll watch it, as in, you know, that sort of mind-numbing watching from the telly. I do, you know, the special things that end up hitting YouTube yes. and being sensational, I do get into those, but I would never sit down and watch a full episode of Ellen.
And that's probably how I feel about it too. But there is a new podcast called Ellen on the Go, and it opens saying, "Hi, this is Ellen and welcome to my podcast." But the podcast is four producers of the show, and they've all been there for 16 years, which is as long as the show's been going. So they've been with the Ellen show since it started. So they talk about behind the scenes and they play snippets from the show, and they talk about why Ellen wanted a particular person on the show or how it happened. And the first episode, I wasn't sure if I was going to like it, but I think I'm coming around and I really enjoy it. And now when I see it download, I think, oh, good, I'll add that into today's listen. So just for anyone who might like Ellen or just might like to just sort of have a quick recap, Ellen on the Go, I recommend.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, that does sound good, and I would like to listen to that. And I did see, Nikki, have you started listening to Serial, the latest season?
I have started listening to Serial, the latest season. Have you?
I haven't. No, tell me.
Well, we should talk about it when we both listened.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right, the only other one I would suggest listening to, and this is a little bit work slashes into personal, is my boss has just launched his second book, Barefoot Invested for Families, but he did a podcast with The Garret. Have you ever listened to The Garret?
I haven't listened to The Garret.
Okay, so it's a writers on writing sort of podcast. So they interview writers usually. But I thought what was interesting about Scott's podcast with them was it was all about his publishing deal and how he came about publishing his second book. So his first book was an Australian bestseller, and it's been, you know, number one on the bestsellers list for, you know, a year. So He had this really interesting thing. He's got a very big email subscription base as well, because that's part of his business. And so he sort of advertised his pre-order. He was number 6 on the bestsellers list before his book had even hit the shelves, just in pre-orders. And so this is kind of, it's, this interview is not sort of about him and him being the finance guy. It's about him being the writer and the publishing guy, and why he didn't self-publish and how he went about it. And they're kind of calling him a publishing disruptor, which I think is really interesting. So if that's your bag and you're sort of interested in that sort of world, I think you'll really enjoy the podcast. I did, and I work for him and I talk to him every day, but I found it really interesting listening. It was a good podcast. Okay, well, I will see you again, or I will talk to you again next week.
Okay, speak to you then. Bye-bye.